Montauk's, I'm Mary Elizabeth Williams, and it is always an extra special day when we get to welcome back one of our favorite guests, and we have that pleasure today. This is Chris Gethard. He is a comic, an actor, an author. He has been the host of the appropriately named Chris Gethard Show, last year's HBO special Career Suicide, which was just amazing and beautiful and will make you laugh and cry. The podcast, Beautiful Anonymous, and now he has a brand new book out. It's part memoir, part guide to life, part guide to New Jersey, and it's called Lose Well. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me back.
So this, I love it as a fellow veteran of the Garden State. You talk a lot about your origins, but this is a book that really is, it's your story. You talk about your life, but what you always do in your work, and I think why it connects so deeply with people, is you also make it about your audience. You make it participatory. And your vantage point of this book, the spine of it really is this story of how do we lose well. Why did you take on the topic of losing for memoir?
Well, I've had a lot of experience with losing, so I felt like it was something I had a right to speak to. And I think because I sort of very publicly walked a non-traditional path, I tend to get a lot of people who approach me either in person after I do shows, or they'll reach out on social media, and a lot of people will say, like, you know, they'll look at the fact that my TV show started on public access, or they'll look at the fact that I, you know, have sort of pounded the pavement as hard as I have in so many ways, and people will be like, I want to do that too. How'd you do it? So this book was really an effort to say, well, if I'm going to be asked that question over and over again, I might as well take every single thought I have regarding that and put it in one place. And so much what I've learned and what I'm able to offer is it won't be easy. You'll bang your head against the wall. That will seem daunting, but if you can just figure out how to get that part of the process to feel like something you can peacefully coexist with and be comfortable with and not try to correct or avoid, you will at least learn enough about yourself that it will have been worth going down in flames in the process.
And pounding that pavement. You talk about literally pounding the pavement and dragging equipment up hills for years, like literally just dragging things up hills for years.
Yeah, people are really surprised to hear when we did our show on public access for 4 years, and that entire time, we weren't allowed to store anything at the studio, so the whole set had to fit in the trunk of my car. And I did, like you said, have to, by myself, like, take it out of the trunk, and people would see me. People would be coming to the show to watch me, like fans of mine, and they'd see me just like dragging big bags of wires and stuff up the road. And even if we had props to our show, it was so crazy that sometimes it would be like big bags of dildos and stuff, and it would just be me like sweating and dragging it up a hill, and it was pretty sad. It was pretty sad to see the look on people's faces when they'd be like, we're here because we like your TV show and we want to support you. And you're like sweating and grunting and throwing your back out, dragging a giant bag of dildos. Like, what is going on? It's pretty sad, but then it all worked out. And that's kind of the point of this book.
That's what show business looks like.
You got to drag your own dildos.
You got to drag your own bag of dildos up that hill every day. You got to wake up in the morning willing to drag that bag of dildos wherever it may take you.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about this because you are a creative person. You are very entrepreneurial in your life, and this is a book that really talks about that and talks about making your own opportunities and trying the things that you know people might say no to and figuring out where you can create the space rather than waiting for permission. But all of us have experience with trying. All of us have experience with disappointment, with failure. So how do you think someone reading this book can apply those messages and apply those lessons when you're like, I'm just this schlub working in an office. What do I know about dragging a bag of dildos, Chris?
Well, I think at the end of the day, there's so many influences trying to convince us to just stay in our lane, right? Like whether that's your boss who just wants your world to be your cubicle, or whether that's the people in your personal life who didn't chase their own dreams so they kind of don't want you to, or whether that's just a society in general that's like, this is who you are, you were born into it, you stay there. I just don't believe in that. I also think, you know, there's so many worlds of gatekeepers, and I think that's across the board. There's so many industries where you need other people's permission to do things, but we also live in a very exciting time where there's a dozen different ways to reach people directly, whether that's through something like YouTube or social media or whatever it is, there's now also a world we live in where you can put your stuff out there, take a shot in the dark, and see if it sticks. So I think that's part of why I feel comfortable giving people that advice of, at some point, if you have this unscratched itch, it might be on you to just try to go for it and kick down the door, because it's not going to just sit on a shelf gathering dust anymore. You can put it out there. Amazon has a whole self-publishing system if you want to be an author. And I would highly recommend that you do your best to find an agent and a publisher who's going to provide all the stuff for you that those things provide. But if you can't, and nobody wants to take a chance on you, we live in a world where you can really take a chance on yourself. And I look at that and go, well, why wouldn't you? Like, if no one else wants to bet on you, bet on yourself. And if you strike out, at least you've put out that fire. At least you know it's time to move on. Maybe, just maybe, that'll help you avoid some of the stress or the anxiety or the bitterness that comes along with feeling like no one ever saw it or no one ever gave you a shot. Take the shot yourself, then you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Well, let's talk about the bitterness, because I love that this book, both of the words of the title, have equal weight and value.
Thank you.
It is not enough to lose. Mm-mm. It is about losing well. And the way you describe it in the book is that failure can be your best ally, your best friend, or it can turn you into a bitter turd.
Yeah, I do use the phrase bitter turd at bitter one point turd. In this book. I'm glad that one stuck with me.
Well, bitter turd is...
I was hoping that would jump out at people.
That's a visual, Chris, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But there's truth to it. I've seen it. Like, I can tell you, I've seen in my time in comedy, I feel like I've learned a lot of lessons that when I step back, I realize they apply across the board to people. And I've seen people who are not the most naturally talented. And I would include myself in this category. I've seen people who are not the most naturally gifted, who will just work hard and get back up when bad things happen, dust themselves off and get back to work. And usually you see those people bust through to some level of relative success. I've seen other people who are supremely gifted who aren't willing to put in the work, aren't willing to wait until it's time for them to go get it. And they will very often go, well, why is this other person getting something that I'm not getting? Like, how come them and not me? And that bitterness will actually ruin what your natural talent has to offer. I've seen those people exit my industry, even though they had a supreme level of natural gifts. Just, they turn bitter. They turn gross. It turns negative. They can't handle the fact that other people are getting things when they're not, and they go away. But I've seen it go the other direction too, where there's people who it's like, you're fine, you're pretty funny, but you work your ass off, you get better and better over time, and now you have like a nice stable thing going. It's just been very, very eye-opening to go, you can get bitter or you can get busy. Like, those are your two options. And one is always healthy and one is always not. So stop with the shit talk, especially on the internet. Stop with posting like pithy little things that call out other people's success. Like, why? It doesn't get you anything. And if someone else got a job that you wanted, if they didn't get it, it doesn't mean you would have. Like, stop. Like, bitterness is the ultimate enemy of creativity, I think.
And you talk about, and I so identify with it, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, when you talk about, when you just said now about when somebody gets that thing that you wanted and you feel upset, but when somebody gets that thing you didn't even want and you still feel upset,
yeah.
Like, how dare they get this thing I never even wanted in the first place.
Absolutely.
I was never even trying for, but it's just that cultural expectation of someone else having something that is very hard not to buy into.
Yeah, it's very, very true. And I write about it in the book, the first 10 years of my career, I was on this trajectory towards certain types of jobs. Jobs on writing staffs for different shows. I eventually got a sitcom job. And those were all things I was chasing, and there was such an adrenaline rush when I would get those opportunities. And when I was on that sitcom, it really bombed. And it was hard. But I also took a step back and I was like, this doesn't sting as much as it should. Why? Why isn't this crushing me? And I realized, I don't even like sitcoms. So what am I doing chasing them? Like, why did I think, there is not a single sitcom I watch. I have friends who work on them. I know people in my life who do enjoy that format, and that's great. I'm not trying to like come down on a whole style of entertainment. But this is not a thing I enjoy. It was pure ego to even want this job. Other people had jobs similar to this So I felt like I deserved that job too. And then I took a step back and went, nothing about that reflects what I think is actually funny in the world or of value. It was all ego, like you said. It was all just other people have stuff like this, so I want stuff like that. Who cares? Who cares? What does that get you at the end of the day? It gets you a pat on the back and nothing that feels even close to actually being fulfilled.
But we live in this culture where we are constantly deluged with these images of what success looks like, of what being aspirational looks like, of what we're supposed to want. We certainly put our kids on that track.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, here's what you're going to do to get to this point. And there's not a lot of interrogation of the question of what will make you satisfied, what will make you happy, what will make you feel like you're being of service to other people in the world.
Right.
And what you're talking about in this book is taking that moment in your life to step back and say, yeah, but what do I want?
Yeah, and what brings that value to the world, like you said, like it's presented, the idea of success and failure presented as such a black and white issue. And the older I get and the more that I just remain someone who has had to self-start every level of my career, it's never a black and white issue. It's not you succeeded or you failed. It's you land somewhere in these gray areas where maybe things went in a different direction than you expected. And maybe it winds up a little smaller and a little more boutique or niche, however you want to put it, but it's very, very fulfilling. I've had that experience. I had another thing where, you know, I had a TV show that I worked on endlessly for half a decade, and it got to cable, and then it got canceled, and that was a bummer. And that was something I poured tons of work into. Meanwhile, I have a podcast that was sort of a throwaway idea, and 100,000 people download every episode, and I never even expected that, and I didn't even put any work into it. And it's like one of these confusing things where it's like, well, does the fact that the TV show got canceled erase the fact that it was a strong community that meant the world to me, that I think helped a lot of people? It doesn't at all. That is success, even if the numbers didn't reflect success. The podcast was a throwaway idea that has exploded. So that's a more traditional success. But it's also one that I didn't pour an endless amount of work into. It's one that I get to just like sit back and enjoy the ride on. Those are very different levels of success. And one looks more like a failure, but they both are of equal value to me. You know?
Yeah, and it's what you're saying about we live in this culture where we are so measured by these outside metrics of what success looks like, and as you say, there are more opportunities because of the culture we live in and the technology that we have to put ourselves out there and try, but then the punishments for that can be so great. Because the opportunities to shame each other and humiliate each other and belittle each other are also so intense. It's a really hard time to be vulnerable.
I think so. It's not the most welcomed thing. And I think without even leaning towards like one end of the political spectrum or the other, if you just look at the way we are conducting politics, it's so clear. It's like being vulnerable, you get eaten alive. It's about like aggression and getting it done your way and winning. And I just don't believe in winning. I don't think that attitude of like, I'm gonna go out and win gets us much. I believe in the idea of like, I'm gonna go out and make things happen for myself. I'm gonna go out there and maybe have a chip on my shoulder and see if I can't buck expectations a little bit. But I think this idea of like, I win, everyone else loses is such a weird, dangerous mindset that we've fallen into. And I don't get why we do it. I don't get why it's wrong to live a smaller, more gentle, more vulnerable life. I don't get how that is in some way something to roll your eyes at or to dismiss. I think it's pretty beautiful. I found over and over again in my life that as I get closer to things that feel like mainstream success, my instinct is always to go a little bit smaller, to have something that has a community that feels a little bit more connected because of that. That always just feels better to me. And I look at some people in my life who are extremely successful by the standard definition, and from the outside they seem to be some of the loneliest people I know, and it doesn't always seem easy to get to that level as well. So I think you have to decide for yourself what all this stuff means.
Yeah, and that requires really shooting down a lot of your own, the things that get in your way. And you talk about getting out of your own way and some of the things we do. And you just pound the reader with no, you don't get to make this excuse. Yeah. You don't get to make the excuse of, I love this one, I better hit bottom first.
Yeah, that one bugs me out. Especially as someone who's talked a lot about mental health in my life. I see that come up in that area, and also with a lot of stuff involving dreams. It's like, you know, I'm not going to really chase my dream until I lose my job. It's like, why? Why work a job you hate forever just so you can be under financial duress before you go and try the thing you want to do? Like, maybe strategize a little bit to fan the flames on both now. When it comes to mental health, like, why wait until you have some, like, freak out, panic attack, nervous breakdown before you think about medication? If you know that's coming. I write about a friend of mine had a conversation with me once where they said, I'm going to wait until I really lose it before I go on medication. And I said, but you are telling me that you feel like you're about to lose it or it's imminent. Yeah. So why not, like, try to deal with it now and cut it off at the pass? You know, I think that is one of the things that I really firmly believe that I talk about in the book. Is I think we have this, like, romantic notion of a hero's journey sometimes, where it's like, well, if I want to build myself up, I got to hit the bottom and then crawl out of the mud. And it's like, why? Why exactly does it need to go there? Maybe it can be something that you're a little more open about and strategic about before it comes to that, so you don't need to suffer as part of it.
And yet, we live in a culture where there is a terror of hitting the bottom. There mm-hmm. is a terror of trying and failing. There is a terror of in any way revealing, I'm struggling, this wasn't successful, I took a shot at something and it didn't work out.
Yeah, it's not that scary. I've had a lot of things work out. People can see I wrote a book. I'm talking about having had a TV show. Like, I've had some successes, but I
you
promise
had you, a sitcom.
Yeah,
that you
there
did
was been
not
a
enjoy.
Bunch of stuff, but I promise you that in underneath all of that's the tip of an iceberg, and you know you only see the 10% tip of the iceberg. The other 90% has been nothing but dismal failure, and it. You get used to it. I think that's one of the main things I'm trying to say in the book as well, is like, the more you fail, the more you get used to it, and the more it just becomes a thing that is just like always just standing here over your shoulder, where you're like, oh, that sucks, but whatever, it's right there. Like, it's one of the, I will say, being a stand-up comic has taught me that, because I did a show 2 days ago where I bombed the hardest I've bombed in 5 years, and it's like, who cares? I guess I just get back on the horse, and I did another show yesterday, and that one went pretty great. So this idea that failure wrecks you is a fallacy, and it keeps us locked up a little bit. Failure is not that scary. Just like anything else, you have to go out there and get used to it, you know? You just have to go out and learn how to do it. Swimming in a pool is pretty scary until you learn how to swim. Failing is pretty scary until you learn how to fail. We've convinced ourselves it's a boogeyman, and it's not. It can actually be an ally.
I as you're saying this, Chris, I'm thinking back to what you were talking about, the people you've known, and we've all known, who seem to be shining the brightest mm-hmm. and who seemed to be the greatest geniuses. And I wonder if that is in some way a curse, because those are the people who out of the gate don't have as many failures.
Sometimes. There's been some examples of people I've seen who sort of like walk this like very quick path to success, and you know, friends of mine who I came up with or who I've seen even start years after me and then just rock it on by, and I had to take a deep breath and not be bitter about that, as I was saying before.
A bitter turd.
Exactly, not to become that myself. But I worry about those people sometimes. I worry, like, at some point you will get knocked down. And if you get to this point where it's all eyes on you and you've never learned how to get knocked down, the first time it happens, you're going to be under such a massive spotlight that I worry for people who are friends and who are acquaintances. And it has been hard to see sometimes. People who are constantly told they're great, when you see from afar that first public failure, sometimes it can be very hard to watch them have to learn how to do that in the spotlight. I feel very blessed that I learned how to fail when nobody gave a shit about me. That was much preferable. And then my more public failures felt like, you know, felt very much like I was at home failing.
Because
you're very lucky with that. Yeah,
you've had some practice. So before you go, I have to tell you, I think my favorite part of the book, and I love it all, is when you talk about when you take a step back in your life and you look at it, what you remember often the most fondly and what you have the best stories about are those moments when your life took an unexpected turn.
Absolutely. It's my main regret. Sometimes people ask me if I regret anything. And I do think I've managed to set up a life where I don't have many regrets. I haven't busted out in the mainstream, but I don't have any regrets, and I think that's a fair trait. I will say, one regret that I bring up when people ask me is that I have all these memories of coming up as a comedian. And me, one of my best friends, a guy people may know, Bobby Moynihan, who was on SNL for years, he and I used to lean on each other so hard. And I remember so many conversations where we'd be, it would be the end of a night, we'd been out doing shows, and now we're sitting in a bar and we're going like, why is it not happening? What do we have to do? How come everybody else is getting stuff and we're not, and this and that. And it eventually worked out for both of us. And I have to say, the one regret I have is that I didn't realize back then that those were actually some of the most fun times of my entire life. Like sitting in that booth with your friend who's also fighting for the same thing you're fighting for, and being able to just stay up all night and be like, we want to make it work. We got to make it happen. It felt so stressful. And I wish I had just taken a deep breath and realized, man, this is also everything I ever wanted my life to be. And it's so fun. And I think, not to speak for him, but I bet he and I would both say, when you start to get that stuff, it's just more pressure and it's just more stress. And you don't even have the fun of having the time to sit in a bar booth with your friend and moan about it, whine about it. Like, it was so fun to be in the trenches eating shit and failing. It was so fun, and I didn't even realize it then. And that is really, honestly, the biggest regret I have about what I've done with my life.
That's a pretty great one to have if you're going to have one, I have
to
say.
For sure.
Chris, and it's also just about finding your tribe and finding your people, which you talk a lot about as well. Chris, I love this book so much. It is such a pleasure always to have you back. Please come back again for any excuse we can get you on. Chris Gethard, the book is called Lose Well. It is an imperative. I'm going to go out and do some disappointment and failure myself today. And I'll be thinking of you, Chris.
I'm so happy to know I'm responsible for
that. Thank you so much for the inspiration.
Oh, thanks for having me.